gated territory. Nearly a dozen civilians were killed after a residential building was bombed in the Al-Daraj neighborhood of Gaza City. To the south, fatalities were reported in Israeli bombing of a home in Al-Talia neighborhood near Khan Yunis. Northern Gaza was also the scene of deadly attacks where dozens of fatalities were reported in strikes on various areas. The north has been the focus of Israel's attacks for more than a month now. The regime has imposed a siege on the area, worsening the already dire humanitarian situation there. According to Gaza officials, some 80,000 people are trapped in the north amid a complete lack of food and medicine. The genocide in Gaza has claimed the lives of over 43,400 people so far. Palestinian resistance movements have strongly condemned the Israeli parliament's final approval of a law allowing deportation of Palestinian resistance fighters' family members to Gaza and elsewhere. Hamas called the measure an affirmation of Israel's hostile and racist approach to Palestinian people in all places where they are present, and added that the law violates the most basic standards of human rights and is an example of collective punishment that violates international humanitarian law. The Islamic Jihad also slammed the legislation, describing it as dangerous and a flagrant violation of all international conventions and norms that prohibit collective punishment. It said the law is aimed at ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian population. The Mujahideen movement also condemned the law as another contempt of the international community as well as international norms and conventions by the regime. Political analyst Daoud Kotab says Israel must be held accountable for its unlawful policies against Palestinians.
Yes, of course. It is a part of the apartheid regime that exists not only in occupied territories but also inside Israel. This is a law that is a proof of the Jewish supremacy or attempts at Jewish supremacy, and it is, as your report said, a collective punishment, which is a violation of international law. Israel must be held accountable, and family members are not to be punished. If you have a problem with a particular person, you should not, by ethics, by law, by even religious edict, punish the family. Why should you punish? This is an attempt to try to pressure the families into abiding by their own ideas, and it is a violation of international law and ethics as well. The real interesting issue is that the entire world, especially the Western world, has been for 75 years giving Israel financial support, political support, because it's supposedly a moral country, a democratic country that abides by the law. And now we're seeing laws in the state of Israel for Israeli citizens that totally violates the basic international law, which is the right of citizenship. And they're trying to remove the right of citizenship from Arab or Palestinians who are citizens of Israel.
Thousands of Yemenis have held a huge rally in the northern city of Saada in a show of solidarity with the people of Gaza and Lebanon. Protesters condemned Israel's year-long genocidal war on Gaza, calling for an immediate ceasefire and an end to the bloodshed in the besieged territory. They also expressed solidarity with the Lebanese people who are facing deadly Israeli aggression against their country. Yemenis also voiced support for their armed forces' operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. Those operations have been ongoing for almost a year now to press Israel to end its aggression in West Asia. Yemeni armed forces are continuing their retaliatory operations in support of the Palestinian and Lebanese people. They targeted an Israeli military base and shot down another U.S. drone. Let's listen in to a statement by Yahya Seri, the spokesman for the Yemeni armed forces.
The missile unit of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a specific military operation targeting the Nevatim airbase in Negev region, southern occupied Palestine, with hypersonic ballistic missile Palestine 2 that has reached its target. Thanks be to Allah. With the help of Allah Almighty, our air defenses succeeded in shooting down an American MQ-9 aircraft while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al-Jawf Governorate at dawn on Friday. With this, the number of American aircraft of this type that the Yemeni air defenses succeeded in shooting down has risen to 12 aircraft during the Battle of the Promised Victory and the Holy Jihad in support of Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. the Yemeni armed forces continue, with the help of Allah Almighty, to support the Palestinian and Lebanese people by continuing to impose a naval blockade on the Israeli enemy, as well as supporting military operations and confronting all hostile threats, and that these operations will not stop until the end of the aggression and blockade on the Gaza Strip, as well as the end of the aggression on Lebanon.
The Islamic resistance in Iraq has carried out new anti-Israel operations, striking targets deep inside the occupied territories. The Iraqi resistance released a video showing the moment drones were launched at military targets in northern Israel. The group has stepped up its anti-Israel operations in recent weeks, mainly targeting the ports of Haifa and Eilat. The operations have been ongoing almost on a daily basis. The Iraqi Islamic Resistance is an umbrella group of several movements. It is time and again stressed that the anti-Israel operations will continue until the regime stops a killing of civilians in Gaza and Lebanon. Tensions escalate between Tel Aviv and Paris after Israeli police briefly detained two French consulate members in occupied East Al-Quds.
This is an unacceptable and, to be honest, incomprehensible act. On a day like this, I have traveled to Israel to speak on behalf of France and to discuss with the authorities ways of leading the region towards peace. I will be summoning the Israeli ambassador to Paris so that he can explain this incident, which must never happen again.
The incident happened on Thursday when Israeli police entered the church of the Paternoster. Paris says armed Israeli officers entered the French-administered site without authorization. They detained two officials with diplomatic status, prompting the French foreign minister to cancel his visit to the site. The two consulate members were later released. Israel claims an argument arose between its officers and the French guards. France, however, says Israel is harming relations between the two sides. Paris and Tel Aviv were already at loggerheads after France called for an arms embargo on Israel due to the war on Gaza. France is also critical of Israel's aggression on Lebanon, saying a regional escalation must be avoided. Well, to get more insight into the tension between Tel Aviv and Paris, we were earlier joined by Nasser Mashni, president of Australia-Palestine Advocacy Network. Let's take a listen to his comments.
What we've seen in this church, which is sovereign French territory, is Israeli stormtroopers act with the impunity they've enjoyed for so long because of what the West has conferred upon it, to seize two French citizens who have diplomatic immunity and cause an international incident of grave embarrassment and to apologize retrospectively. But what we're seeing is what Israel is, what Zionism is, what this Zionist entity is. And that's manifested itself beyond just this church to what we've seen, the genocide in Gaza, what's now unfolding in Lebanon and in Syria, but also to these genocidal maniacs on holiday, as we've seen now in Amsterdam, the Maccabi Tel Aviv football team, as they ran amok in Amsterdam, shouting, "Kill the Arabs." There's no schools left in Gaza because all the kids are dead. Kill Muslims. And then for all of the Western reportage to be around a possible pogrom in Western Europe, and Benjamin Netanyahu has sent aeroplanes to, quote-unquote, rescue these thugs. This is a symptom of a very sick disease of racism, of Zionism.
An Amsterdam city council member says the violence that erupted in the Dutch capital following a football match between Amsterdam team Ajax and Maccabi Tel Aviv was instigated by Israeli fans. The official said Israeli fans attacked houses of people with Palestinian flags. He said Amsterdamers then stepped in trying to protect people and their property. The city council member also slammed the police's inaction. He said the security forces stood by and did nothing while the Israeli fans ran away after attacking people. Palestine's foreign ministry also condemned the racist chants and the destruction of the Palestinian flags. The Palestinian Authority urged the Dutch government to investigate the incident and protect its Palestinian and Arab citizens. The violence took place on Thursday evening and left over two dozen people injured. In the years leading up to Iran's Islamic Revolution, women played an indispensable role, with their contribution being crucial to the revolution's success. Now, a special conference and exhibition in Tehran is shining a spotlight on the strength and determination of these women, particularly the ones that were jailed as political prisoners. Fatemeh Masumi has more.
Actively participating in protests and demonstrations, distributing leaflets with information about gatherings and statements, sharing cassettes of Imam Khomeini's speeches, women played a pivotal role in Iran's Islamic Revolution, and this week their efforts are honored by a conference and exhibition dubbed Revolutionaries of 57 at Tehran's Ghazi Prison Museum, a historical site now transformed into a cultural landmark.
This meeting focuses on the roles of women in the revolution, highlighting their contributions. As revolutionary activists and political prisoners, we will engage in a discussion on the significant impact of women during this transformative period.
Educating the next generation and documenting the experiences of these resilient women are essential to understanding how Iran has evolved into the country it is today.
Women have often been seen as a challenge and a problem during times of war, as evidenced in both World War I and World War II. However, during our revolution and in all wars that took place within and beyond our borders, our women have been pillars of support and sources of opportunity. They have faced every obstacle with strength and resilience, turning seemingly insurmountable challenges into triumphs.
Despite facing considerable challenges and risks, these women remain steadfast, contributing to the formation of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Their courage and perseverance serve as a testament to the significant role women have played in shaping Iran's current political and social landscape.
It was a true epic, driven by a powerful ideology and the desire for independence. The people sought autonomy as the country underwent a transformative period, aiming to break free from external influences and assert its own identity.
The stories of the resilience of these women as political prisoners and their determination in advocating for change alongside men are inspiring for the younger generation. Preserving and sharing these narratives ensures that their contributions and sacrifices are recognized and remembered.
Women played a significant role in the Iranian Islamic Revolution by participating in protests, organizing rallies, and mobilizing support against the Shah's regime, and the Islamic Republic of Iran underscores the value of empowered women and resilient mothers. Fatemeh Masumi, Tehran.
The U.S. election showed that the resistance in Gaza is even capable of changing a warmongering administration in Washington. That's according to the chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Major General Hossein Salami says U.S. Democrats fully supported the Israeli genocide in Gaza. He added the Americans decided not to vote for those who armed the regime's killing machine. Salami stressed the only change now before the new U.S. statesman is scaling down aid to Israel. He said the U.S. knows the expansion of war will only further harm its credibility, power, and interests. The IRGC chief said, while Israel has the advantage in terms of weaponry in the war, the resistance has enjoyed great achievements. Salami expressed confidence that the defeat of Israel is close. More Russian military strikes on Ukraine after almost 1,000 days of war. Ukraine says the death toll from a Russian aerial attack on the city of Zaporizhia has risen to 8. Zaporizhia's governor said a 1-year-old boy was among those killed. Over 40 people were injured in the attack that also destroyed houses and a hospital. A separate attack targeted the eastern Donetsk region, killing 2. Dozens of Russian drones also targeted the capital city of Kiev. Russian forces have stepped up their attacks on the frontline city of Zaporizhia in recent days. They are also making rapid advances in the industrial city. In the industrial territory, rather, of Donetsk, Russia attacked Ukraine in February 2022 with the declared goals of demilitarizing and denazifying the country. That's a wrap for now.
follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Last week, we completed explanation of Surah Abbas, and today we start explanation of Surah Takwir, which is number 81 in the serial order of the compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Mecca, it has 29 ayahs, and its name derived from the word Kuwarat in ayah 1 means the winding up, enfolding, and darkening of the sun at the end of earthly life and the dawn of eternity. The surah stresses the fact that all human beings face their deeds on Judgment Day, thus asserting the truth of the Quran, and is inviting the people to the right path. It opens with a powerful description of events on that day. There are many hadith on the importance of reciting Surah Takwir and studying it, such as this saying from the Prophet of Islam: whoever studies Surah Takwir will be saved by Allah from being exposed to shame when the Book of Deeds is laid open. We now invite you to listen to ayahs 1 to 9.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إذا الشمس كورت وإذا النجوم كدرت وإذا الجبال سيرت وإذا العشار عطلت وإذا الوحوش حشرت وإذا البحار سجرت وإذا النفوس زوجت وإذا الموءودة سئلت بأي ذنب قتلت.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful, when the sun is wound up, and when the stars scatter losing their luster, and when the pregnant camels are neglected, and when the wild beasts are mustered, and when the seas are set afire, and when the souls are assorted, and when girl buried alive will be asked for what sin she was killed. These ayahs mentioned shocking and horrendous events of the end of the world and the solar system at the start of resurrection. The spherical sun is extremely hot and blazing, surrounded by intensely burning gases whose flames shoot out hundreds of kilometers. The Earth or any other planet, if put in one of its flames, it would instantly change into ash and gas. According to modern science, 4 million tons of the sun's mass turns into energy every minute as planets orbit around it, thereby gradually diminishing its mass. This trend continues until the sun gradually reaches the end of its life. This is the fact to which the Noble Quran referred a millennium and a half ago, along with the demise of the solar system. What appears to us as stars will lose their luster, scatter and fall, as chaos replaces the orderly regularity of the universe. In such a state, it is natural for the huge mountains to set in motion and break into pieces. The horrified events make human beings to leave all their possessions, including the livestock they raise, such as the pregnant camels on their ranches, while beasts of every kind, horrified at the darkness, huddle together instead of the weak ones, running away from the ferocious ones. The seas and oceans reach the boiling point as if in flames. On this day, as resurrection dawns, human souls, categorized as per their beliefs and deeds, will be in the company of each other, and the evildoers in each other's company. Ayah 8 points to one of the most horrible practices in the days of ignorance, when due to the mistreatment of women, some persons, assuming to be spared of shame or poverty in society, used to bury their daughters alive. The Almighty Creator strongly castigates such cruel action and questions the polytheists regarding the burying alive of their daughters when these children had not committed any crime or shameful act. Unfortunately, this sordid practice has not ended in our modern so-called civilized and scientific world, including the technologically advanced West, where hypocrisy prevails. And despite claims of humanitarian values, girls and women end up as commercial or carnal objects. In idol-worshipping societies, the abortion of female fetus is common, which means killed in the wombs of mothers before being born. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, on the threshold of the day of resurrection, a great upheaval will entirely change the order of the universe through horrible events. Number two, the virtuous believers will be immune, while the wicked and the vicious ones suffer the consequences. Number three, all human beings are the creation of the all-merciful God with the right of life for both males and females, without any gender preference. And number four, today, also, non-Islamic cultures mistreat girls and women, while wrongly accusing Islamic societies of discrimination because of lack of understanding of the benefits of hijab and refrainment from unethical behavior. Now let us listen to ayahs 10, 11, 12, 13 and 14 of the same surah in conclusion of this week's edition of Path Towards Enlightenment.
وَإِذَا الصُّحُفُ نُشِرَتْ وَإِذَا السَّمَاءُ كُشِطَتْ وَإِذَا الْجَحِيمُ سُعِّرَتْ وَإِذَا الْجَنَّةُ أُزْلِفَتْ عَلِمَتْ نَفْسٌ مَا أَحْضَرَتْ.
And when the records of deeds are unfolded, and when the sky is stripped off, and when hell is set ablaze, and when paradise is brought near, then a soul will know what it has prepared for itself. On the occurrence of resurrection, all human beings assemble in the divine court of justice for the final verdict, with the record of their deeds, whether good or bad, in their respective hands. The sky stripped off all impediments blocking the sights, makes visible the flames of hell and the bliss of paradise, with every person knowing his or her final destination as per the deeds following the intense mercy of the all-compassionate Creator. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, although Allah is aware of all our deeds and judges them with plenty of mercy and without the least discrimination, He lets all human beings see and recollect whatever they had done during the transient life of the mortal world, so that there is no excuse for anyone. And number two, with the removal of all curtains on Judgment Day, everything hitherto beyond sights and senses becomes clearly visible.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, ask Allah and He will give you in your Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here at your service. We are talking about how if we ask Allah, He will give us when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle. So, of course, in our Islamic lifestyle, we are trying to get closer to the Almighty Allah. Of course, that is our fundamental purpose with the Islamic lifestyle. And perhaps even more fundamental than getting closer to the Almighty Allah is to attain the satisfaction of the Almighty Allah. Now, in return for attaining, or, you know, as a consequence of attaining the satisfaction of the Almighty Allah, we end up gaining the nearness to the Almighty Allah. But regardless, our purpose is qurbatan ilallah, is to gain the nearness and the proximity to the Almighty Allah. Of course, this Islamic lifestyle leads to perfection and prosperity and happiness, both in this world and the next. And so we're talking about how we should call upon Allah, we should ask Allah, and He will give us. Now, I'm sure you know that it's not as straightforward as that, that if we just ask whatever we want, we will get. Sometimes, as the Holy Quran tells us, as well as many of the traditions of the Infallibles and Immaculates, peace and blessing upon them all, they tell us that many times, or at least sometimes, what happens is that what we ask for is actually not good for us. But we don't know that it's not good for us, right? And so we ask the Almighty Allah, you know, for something that we think is good for us, but in reality, it is something that is harmful for us. And so how merciful is the Almighty God that He does not accept that request from us, which we think is good for us, but is in reality bad for us. And Allah knows that it is bad for us. So alhamdulillah, that in that situation, the Almighty God does not accept our prayers. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how we should call upon Allah, we should ask Allah, and He will surely give us. Now, we talked about a very important point, a very fine detail, but it helps us in our life and our Islamic lifestyle. And of course, that was this idea that sometimes we ask for something that we think is good in our limited knowledge framework. But in reality, when it comes to the cosmos and the universal order, we find that that thing which we think is good for us is actually harmful for us. And so, out of the mercy and compassion that the Almighty and Exalted Allah has for every single one of us, Allah does not accept that prayer because it's harmful for us. Now, another very interesting thing, you know, when it comes to this prerequisite of having, Allah answer our call, we find that there's this tradition where Abu Hamza Thumali, he narrates, and he says that the Almighty Allah revealed to Prophet Dawood, Prophet David, that no sooner does a servant of mine obey me in what I have commanded them, that I give them before they even ask me, and I answer their supplication even before they supplicate to me. So a very important point as we're running out of time, but this is something that if we want Allah to answer our call, to answer our prayers, to answer our du'as, to answer our needs, our wishes, then we have to obey the commandments of the Almighty Allah. The more we obey the commandments of the Almighty Allah, the more, in turn, He will answer our prayers and supplications. And so, call upon Allah, and Allah will answer in our Islamic lifestyle. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, Our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In Britain, a survey has found almost one in three British doctors investigated by the General Medical Council have thought about taking their own lives. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Research has found UK doctors are having suicidal thoughts because disciplinary proceedings against them by their National Health Service employer take so long to resolve. Medics who have been accused of misconduct say the current system of investigating allegations is brutal and humiliating to go through and can feel like a witch hunt. Three out of four doctors who had faced proceedings said the length of time it took to conclude them damaged their mental health and led them to suffering and anxiety, stress and depression. Almost 9 out of 10, or 88%, said they were left feeling angry and frustrated by the disciplinary process. 4 out of 5 were left feeling as if they were guilty until proven innocent, with some complaining that they were treated like a criminal. Some were suspended from practicing medicine by their National Health Service Trust while the disciplinary process continued. One doctor told the Medical Protection Society, which surveyed 61 medics who had faced disciplinary charges for its research, that it was horrible. I was treated like a criminal. My office space was given to someone else. My belongings were confiscated. One said they were not interviewed at all as part of the initial investigation, and when they sought a second investigation, they were exonerated, but were barred from working as a surgeon while the process dragged on. Another medic said, I had anxiety and depression. The process was brutal. A third medic said it had a devastating impact on all aspects of my life, even though I am at the tail end of my career. The initial steps taken against me were disproportionate. Half of the doctors who recounted their experience as part of the MPS study said they had been accused of wrongdoing after raising concerns about patient safety where they worked. That prompted concern that misconduct charges are used as part of a culture of fear within the National Health Service. Dr. Naru Narayanan, the president of the Hospital Consultants and Specialists Association, a medical trade union, said that finding had led him to believe that National Health Service Trust deliberately instigated disciplinary charges as a form of silencing or punishing whistleblowers. Dr. Narayanan said, "They are all too often used to silence or exert control. The fact that over half of doctors polled believe that they're raising patient safety concerns was a factor in their investigation should shock, but it sadly comes as no surprise." The NPS supports about 450 doctors a year who have been accused of wrongdoing. Dr. Rob Hendry, its medical director, said failure to conduct disciplinary swiftly and fairly can perpetuate a climate of fear amongst doctors within the National Health Service, which works against improving patient safety. NHS disciplinary proceedings against doctors should take a few months, but Freedom of Information requests by the NPS showed that they take on average of 222 days, more than 7 months. One case, which was detailed in NHS Trust's response, took 2,437 days, almost 7 years, to be resolved. Danny Mortimer, the chief executive of NHS Employers, which represents NHS Trust in employment matters, said, "This report highlights some important messages regarding the duty of care that is owed to all employees, including doctors, when concerns regarding their conduct are raised and are being investigated." He suggested changes when needed, adding, "National Health Service leaders will need to ensure that their policies and practices are fit for purpose and balance that duty of care with the requirements of fair and rigorous HR processes." Danny Mortimer said, "It is also the case that the way in which conduct concerns are managed for doctors are far more complicated than for other staff groups, both within the National Health Service or is typical elsewhere in the economy." Mortimer added, "We will carefully discuss the NPS's findings with them to identify areas where processes can be streamlined and improved." The website of Medical Protection has also covered this same story and tells us more. A survey has found almost one in three British doctors investigated by the General Medical Council have thought about taking their own lives. The Medical Protection Society said many doctors under investigation feel they're being treated as guilty until proven innocent and face devastating consequences. It added the regulator pursues too many cases against doctors for minor alleged matters and often takes months and sometimes years to make a ruling. Its survey of 197 doctors investigated by the General Medical Council over the last 5 years found that 31% said they had suicidal thoughts, 8% had quit medicine, and another 29% had thought about doing so. 78% said the investigation damaged their mental health. And 91% said it triggered stress and anxiety within their lives. The NPS, which represents doctors accused of wrongdoing, accused the General Medical Council of lacking compassion, being heavy-handed, and failing to appreciate its impact on doctors. One doctor told the NPS, "I did feel my life was not worth living after how much I had dedicated to being a doctor." Another had occasional thoughts that if I was no longer here, this would all go away. A third felt that they had been left permanently damaged after 3 years of psychotherapy. In March of last year, the General Medical Council said 29 doctors died between January of 2018 and December of 2020 while it was investigating them. 5 of those were found to have been suicides. Dr. Rob Hendry, the MPS's medical director, said, "Finding out your fitness to practice is being called into question can be devastating for a doctor, and it is easy to see how a doctor's mental health could deteriorate, even if they feel they are considered guilty from the outset." The MPS praised the General Medical Council's efforts to improve its communications with doctors under investigation, but urged the regulator to go further. For example, it said the General Medical Council should use kinder, more empathic language in the first letter it sends to a doctor telling them that someone has complained about them, and also when writing to tell them that it is taking no further action. There was a huge outcry among medics last year when the General Medical Council suspended Dr. Manjula Arora, a general practitioner, for a month for allegedly dishonestly saying she had been promised a work laptop computer. The regulator later admitted handling the case badly and apologised to her. The British Medical Council, the BMA, the main doctors' union, said the MPS says findings showed that the General Medical Council's procedures needed to be radically overhauled. Professor Philip Banfield, the British Medical Association's chair of council, said doctors' confidence in the General Medical Council has been persistently eroded, feeling as though it is more interested in pursuing and punishing them than it is about finding out what really happened and learning from events. Professor Philip Banfield added, "These concerning findings underline the sense of guilty until proven innocent that doctors under investigation experience, and a feeling of hopelessness that this can cause." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir, and now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. are with you. How about you? Irabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. So today we have a interesting topic. And the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi says that sinful, very sinful, huge sinful woman saw a dog one day, and that dog was panting next to a well. You know, it was so thirsty and it was about to die out of thirst. What did this woman do? What would you do if you were there? She took off her shoes, tied it to her scarf, and then brought some water out of the well and gave it to the dog. What happened next? You know, what was the result of this? What do you think? The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says that Allah forgave all her sins. Amazing. Extraordinary. Unbelievable. How can treating an animal? I don't know what kind of dog that was. It might have been a dirty dog, right? But doesn't matter. It was a live being. And this woman, despite the fact that she was a sinful person, despite the maybe a long time that she was she used to commit a lot of sins, but Allah saw that beauty, saw that light in her heart. There was something remained of that purity in her heart, and that came to the surface, and that woman cared for this thirsty dog at that moment. And on the other side, the Holy Prophet says that there was another woman who tied a cat to somewhere, and that cat died out of hunger because this woman neither fed it or led it to hunt for itself, and it died out of hunger. And Imam Sadiq alayhi salam also says the same thing about a woman who made a cat die out of thirst. And what was the result? Allah, kind of guaranteed hellfire for this woman. So this is very, profound, that we should, how are we treating animals today? I mean, on the greater scale, not just pets, not just animals that we can see on the street, but in the greater scale, what are we doing to the environment? what are the governments, politicians, like our policies, everything. What are we doing to the environment? We are destroying their habitats. We are doing any harm to them. So we should be careful. This is the Islamic view about animals, and inshallah, we would be kind to them in any way. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Danesh, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The U.S. Israeli genocidal war against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip is not just against civilians. It is also against reporters and journalists. As the world marks World Press Freedom Day, as proclaimed by the U.N. General Assembly, Israel has killed more journalists than any other war in decades. This day also coincides with the Balfour Declaration, which the British can take credit for devising the plan to have the Jewish settle on occupied Palestinian land. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how the Israeli regime's genocide in the Gaza Strip and its war being waged, an invasion being waged against Lebanon, are proving too costly for it to handle as it braces itself for a retaliatory attack by the Islamic Republic. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Mansakhera Mustafa is a journalist and political commentator who joins us from London. Also joining us is Saab Shah, author and West Asia expert, joining us from Belfast. Welcome to you both, and it's great to see you, Hafsakar Mustafa. And unfortunately, we're looking at a grim set of stats here. First, since your title has journalist in it, when you take a look at this grim stat of 185 journalists and media workers to have been killed in the Gaza Strip on this day of something that the UN has rendered as a day to mark a journalist, what does that make you think in terms of why this is continuing? And, of course, the shocking figure itself.
Well, it's continuing because, obviously, the journalists are reporting on the ground the horrors that we are seeing continuously, in particular on our mobile phones and on our personal devices, because, of course, Western media is not reporting adequately what's happening. So these are precious commentators who are providing us with raw images and with the daily lives of what the Palestinians are going through. And this is why they're being fought, they're being killed, so as not to report on the horrors that they're witnessing. And they're also suffering. I mean, we remember the numerous journalists who not only were killed or who saw live on television their families or their homes being bombed. And often these bombings were actually acts of deliberate acts designed specifically to intimidate them and to make sure that they would stop reporting on the crimes being committed by the genocidal entity in Palestine. Regarding what it makes me feel, I mean, it makes me feel incredibly angry because we're seeing the double standards once again, even in regards